Okay, hi everyone. And by everyone, I mean at least the rest of our class who are actually required to listen to this today. Welcome to our show about financial justice. So big thanks firstly to Shun from Campus Radio and Gertrude, the program director of our UW course, Global Citizenship and Development Education, for giving us the opportunity to do this show and hopefully make you ponder something you don't ponder every day. Why should I care about financial justice? So by way of introduction, there's four of us here today to share what we've learned and also why we think it's important to become aware of this issue. So my name is Ruth. I'm mainly just going to try and keep us on track as we muddle our way through this podcast.
Hi, my name is Stephanie. I'm going to take us through a little bit of the history behind financial justice. So the basic idea behind financial justice is that the rich keep getting richer and poor keep getting poorer. But why is that? We're going to look at some suggestions as to why that might be happening.
Hi guys, my name is Ali and I'm going to talk about climate change. Some of the most devastating extreme weather events in 2001 hit poor nation, which have contributed little to causing climate change. We're going to look at what climate change means for financial justice.
Hi, I'm Caroline, and I did a bit digging into the UN's Sustainable Development Goals as a means for addressing global inequality. So I'm looking forward to taking everyone through what these goals actually are, and also maybe to ask the question, are they really as attainable as they may seem at a first glance?
Hi, everyone. My name is Lowen. So my part will be on financial justice. When I thought first about financial justice, I started to think about implications of debt. What do I mean by debt in this context? So regarding financial justice, the question of debt highlights its consequences on developing countries and how the poorest are suffering its consequences as well.
Okay, thanks, Lowen. So that's all of us. And we'll just go ahead and kick off the show. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. I'll start us off with just a brief outline of what financial justice actually means or, you know, represents, should I say. Just so we're all on the same page, and then I'll pass you over to Steph, who will guide us through the journey of some of the ways that we've gotten to the situation that we're in now. So what is financial justice? Well, financial justice is really all about realizing the inequalities that exist within our financial systems and seeking to end situations where, for example, governments are spending more money repaying debt owed to richer countries, private banks and institutions, that includes the IMF and World Bank, than they do on their healthcare system for their own citizens. So we're talking about servicing completely unsustainable debt over local development needs and basic needs sometimes. Or where like basic structure of our financial system allows each year rich corporations and individuals dodge taxes by hiding their profits and tax havens rather than paying the taxes they owe in the countries where they make that profit. This is draining billions from global tax systems. So for me, financial justice is essentially about bringing awareness of the issues and working globally to craft solutions that move us towards a fairer financial system. What do you think, Steph?
Yeah, that's absolutely it. So for me, understanding and engaging with our current system is the key in making things fairer. And that's what financial justice is about, fairness and equality. And for that, we need a better financial system that can serve the needs of all people equally, which is something that we don't really have now. I said earlier on, the basic idea behind financial justice is that the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer. So if we take a step back and look at what's been happening over the last 100 years or so, we can see why this may have happened. I'm going to go through a very brief whistle-stop tour of history around financial justice. So if we look back at, say, the Great Depression in the late 1920s, think post-Great Gatsby era, it brought on a collapse in the stock markets and financial institutes and huge unemployment and real interest rate increases. So this actually caused the stop to free market liberalism, and these conditions were then exacerbated by World War II. At some point after World War II, when there was substantial economic growth, this started stagnating again around the 1970s, and that's when the wealth gap actually began to appear. So income growth for households in middle and lower classes slowed right down. But the income at the top continued to grow and grow substantially. Then, when the Great Recession hit, I'm talking about the banking crisis of the 2000s, again, we saw rising unemployment, but it was the reverse of the Great Depression. Instead of the upper class losing wealth, it was the working class and middle class families who were affected most when the housing bubble burst. The financial institutes responsible for the Great Recession were bailed out, which caused a backlash in terms of responsibility and accountability at a time when even countries, including Greece, require economic bailout. We've seen people arguing and protesting about this in the past through the 1% movements, Occupy Wall Street and such. Also, which a lot of people don't think about, lower income countries also saw a huge impact at that time. There was falling trade, investment and remittances, and it turned the financial crisis into a social crisis by the end of 2010. Developing economies already trapped in deep poverty lost an estimated $2.6 trillion in output.
Okay, so I mean, quickly seeing the trend there, like not hard to spot, right? The poor hit the hardest during any crisis, and the rich and powerful organizations are being bailed out effectively. So what's that statistic that we looked at? It was something like 85% of global wealth is controlled by just 10% of the population. I mean, like that's an alarming concentration of wealth, but not surprising given the history you've just explained.
Exactly, yeah. So there's already this huge gap creating inequality, and then boom, the pandemic hits. The pandemic saw yet another rise in income inequality. There was actually a recent Oxfam report that showed the world's 10 richest men doubled their fortunes during the pandemic. This is a time when over 160 million people are projected to have been pushed into poverty during the pandemic. It's enabled by skyrocketing stock market prices, a boom in unregulated entities, surge in monopoly power and privatization, alongside the erosion of individual corporate tax rates and regulations, and work rights and wages as well. All of this was aided by the weaponization of racism, because we've seen how these issues affect people of color in a far greater way than Caucasians. Just an example, again, this is from that Oxfam report, which I highly recommend you read if you have a chance. 252 men have more wealth than all 1 billion women and girls in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean combined. That's insane. 252 men versus 1 billion women. That is an unbelievable figure. As well as that, there's actually been calculated that a 99% windfall tax on the COVID-19 wealth gains of the 10 richest men could pay to make enough vaccines for the entire world, fill financing gaps in climate measures, in universal health and social protection, and efforts to address gender-based violence in over 80 countries, while still leaving these men $8 billion better off than they were before the pandemic. Not taking away any wealth pre-pandemic, just the profits during the pandemic itself. And this is not the only financial justice issue to affect lower income countries at the time. In the 2000s, there were so many high profile debt cancellations and debt relief initiatives created for the most in need countries. However, this didn't cause substantial change. Financial Justice Ireland reported that loans to impoverished country governments have almost tripled since the Great Recession began. And this is largely because debt relief ends up creating a cycle of dependency of the borrowing country upon the lender. So after receiving partial cancellation of debts, governments continue to resort to loans, creating new cycles of over-indebtedness. So then it becomes a huge trend. Cancel debts, borrow, cancel, borrow, cancel, borrow. It just keeps piling up. It's not just affecting our everyday topics of conversation, but can affect lives. And that's why we need an urgent revamp of our financial system to protect and share wealth fairly and equally, to ensure the equal distribution of resources in a way that serves communities and the environment in ways historically that have not been done.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's important to look back and recognize the circumstances that led to the global financial system, you know, looking into who were the ones actually creating these rules that we all play by. So that explains some of the history, but I guess, you know, so what? Why should we care? How am I impacted by financial justice? Ali, why don't you start us off with that one?
Thanks, Ruth. So the issue you heard Stephanie speak will only exacerbate by climate change. another crisis that has power to the further increase the wealth gap. So just to identify climate change first. Climate change refers to long-term shifts in temperatures and weather patterns. These shifts may be natural, but since the 1800s, human activities have been the main driver of climate change, primarily due to the burning of fossil fuel like coal, oil and gas, which produces heat-trapping gases. These gases are causing extreme weather. Just alone within the year 2021, the world faced various climate disasters, such as hurricane, flooding, extreme heat, even extreme cold, drought, which has caused huge damage to animals, people, business, the lifestyle of the nation overall. Many even developed countries are not prepared for these natural disasters. Here are some facts. So Hurricane Ida, which struck USA in August, cost $65 billion, while flooding alone in Europe in July cost $43 billion in loss. A UK poll shows public in UK think climate change should be top priority of the government in 2022, above healthcare and the economy. So climate injustice. Climate injustice relate to how the impacts of climate change will be felt differently by different groups, and how some people and places will be more vulnerable than others to these impacts. But vulnerability is not an intent to some groups. Some of the most devastating extreme weather events in 2021 hit the poor nations, which have contributed little to causing climate change. Yet, in addition to the financial costs, these extreme weather events have caused severe human suffering from food insecurity, drought, and extreme weather events, causing mass displacement and loss of life. South Sudan has experienced terrible floods, which has seen more than 850,000 people forced to flee their homes, many whom were already internally displaced, while East Africa continues to be ravaged with drought, highlighting the injustice of climate crisis. Some of the disasters in 2021 hit rapidly, like the cyclone Yaas, which struck India and Bangladesh in May and cost loss value of $3 billion in just a few days.
Yeah, so you can see time and time again, the worst of the crisis, in this instance, the economic impact of of climate change, is being felt by countries that have the least financial resources to deal with them and rebuild. Yet they didn't cause these problems. You know, the events are just occurring as a result of all of our actions. They're just not occurring on our doorstep, devastating our communities and our economy.
So what we want is a climate justice then. Climate justice recognizes that those who are the least responsible for climate change suffer its gravest consequences. Climate justice looks at climate crisis through an equality, human rights lens. Climate change is not an environmental issue. It is, in fact, a justice issue. For example, most carbon gases are produced by the 10% richest people on Earth, yet the 90% of ordinary people have to pay the price for it.
Yeah, thanks, Ali. That makes a lot of sense. So I know there have been global commitments to various climate funds, but we know they often fall short of what's needed and are not always even delivered in the end. Like in 2018, we saw the US pull out of the Green Climate Fund under Trump. And while Biden is leading the charge again on climate change, it's so difficult to trust these promises when changes in political agenda can effectively decimate them, adding to the challenge. Caroline, now, what perspective were you looking at?
So I was looking into something positive we were doing as a global community to tackle inequalities. And that's where my search led me to the Sustainable Development Goals. So I'm going to start off a little bit with talking about what they actually are. So according to the United Nations website, the Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs as they are more commonly referred to, are 17 interlinked global goals, which include 169 targets and 232 indicators that are a call to action to end poverty, protect the planet, while improving the lives of everyone everywhere. So they were set up in 2015 and they have until 2030 to be met, giving a 15-year plan for delivery. They are the main global agenda for international development and have been adopted by governments, civil societies, NGOs and independent organizations. So taking one SDG that's closely linked to financial justice, we could look at goal number one, which is no poverty. So this goal aims to end all forms of poverty on both a local and global scale. Its core targets include ensuring that citizens in the global north and south, and especially the poorest and most vulnerable, have equal rights to economic resources, accesses to basic services, property, natural resources, and new technologies. What's more, this goal aims to build resilience of the poor and those living in areas which are most vulnerable to climate-related extreme events, such as those outlined by Ali. So overall, Ireland is performing well with tackling poverty measures. According to CSO figures released back in 2020, the poverty rate in Ireland fell from 9% in 2013 to 5.6% in 2018. And in 2018, 791 million euro was allocated to poverty reduction programs.
Okay, so there was some progress being made towards this measure. But are the measures enough? You know, and most importantly, is anyone actually being held to account for reaching any of these goals?
Yeah, so actually there has been quite some criticism of the SDGs. So globally, even before the pandemic, it was clear that the SDGs progress was quite slow and off target. And this was highlighted back in 2019 when the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, admitted that the SDGs had a narrow focus on growth and that progress towards them was seriously off track, which he owed to a lack of financing. Another key person who has been quite critical of the SDGs is Philip Alston, who was the UN Special Rapporteur, and he released a report in 2020 strongly criticising the SDGs for not reaching poverty targets. He essentially argued that the SDGs' use of the international poverty line of $1.90 a day as a barometer of poverty is too low, and that even if the targets are met by 2030, billions of people will still be left in serious deprivation. However, a more recent report by Stephen McCluskey, who works at Financial Justice Ireland, goes further to criticise the SDGs framework for not addressing the root causes of injustice and inequality locally and globally, such as colonisation and neocolonial power regimes, global debt programmes and tax havens for the rich. What's more, he suggests that the 17 SDGs are no match for our current global system of neoliberalism, which essentially encourages wealth accumulation of the rich and exploitation and exclusion of the most vulnerable in society. In other words, the SDGs framework aims to reduce global inequalities by providing support to the poor, but while keeping the wealth and power of the global 1% intact.
Intact and growing, you might say. What was that stat that Steph mentioned earlier, where the top 10 richest men saw their wealth double during COVID? I mean, how is that even possible if these organizations are truly aiming for a goal of no poverty, for example? To me, it feels like they literally have the power and resources at hand to meet this goal if they wanted to. But even if people had enough to live on day to day, governments in the least developed countries are stuck in a financial system that doesn't serve them, and they hold little power or influence to change them. Loan, I know this is what you were looking into.
So yeah, exactly. All the financial system is based on one thing, debt. This principle is pretty simple. Someone contracts a loan to a bank with an interest rate, which is the price of the money. For instance, in Europe, the European Central Bank manages the inflows and outflows of European banks. And it works exactly the same in the US with the Federal System Reserve. Thus, it has been this logic of debt which has made running the capitalist system. However, nowadays, we've reached massive worldwide debt level and people are living through major international debt crises all over the world. You can just take a look in Africa, Asia, even Latin America and Europe. Debt affects the economy, which moves to the consumer, the people. And they are the ones that feel the effect, sometimes extremely unequally. So this debt causes poverty. It undermines economic, social and cultural rights and ultimately leads to increasing inequality. I'm going to take a concrete example. So let's take the one of Haiti, which is a developing country. Haiti can ask for a loan because its economic and social situation aren't enough stable, and consequently, there is no trust from the bank, but also from the investors as well. then this country is trapped in underdevelopment because it doesn't have the money. However, it comes from somewhere. And indeed, according to the French economist Thomas Piketty, when slavery was abolished in 1848, the French state did not compensate the slaves, but the owners. Why? Because of the concept of property. As a consequence, the amount of the refund is fixed to the equivalent of 3 years of IT production, so more or less, this is 300% of the GDP. However, Haiti does not have the means to oppose it and must turn to a consortium of French bankers who lend in money for an interest rate. The island can pay compensation to France, but finds itself with a huge debt leading to a situation where it is trapped because of that debt. Then, according to Thomas Piketty, France should repay $30 billion to Haiti. It is an example, among others, underlining the financial responsibility of old colonial empires, such as the French one, English one, but also the Spanish one, towards their old colonies, which are still struggling against underdevelopment. We're not talking about isolated countries here. The effect truly is global. The world's debt crisis is massive. International Monetary Fund analyzed the figures at the end of last year, and the global economic debt rose to $226 trillion, which was exacerbated because of the pandemic. If we look closer to home, Ireland is currently sitting on more than 250 billion euros of debt. History shows us how deeply linked our debt and balanced budget and the consequences of such relationship. Indeed, in order to face debt, budgets need to be balanced and can then lead to financial cuts. The poorest will suffer these consequences, as shown by Greece during the European crisis in 2012 and Argentina in the 90s after the IMF took actions. Then, facing the debt issue regarding financial justice could be for the old colonial empires to take their responsibility and refund their old colonies in order to solve the situation of their underdevelopment. It is also about providing financial assistance to the poorest when hard times come, because they are the first reached by debt consequences.
Thanks, Sloan. Yeah, great. Some really, really good points there. Thank you for your insights. So how do we deal with the lack of financial justice on our planet? And how do we deal with it in a matter that's truly sustainable? So as the saying goes, like, every little helps. Let's look at our options and what we can do that will in turn have impacts locally, nationally, and globally. Caroline?
Yeah, so one organization we would like to draw your attention to is Financial Justice Ireland, which is an Irish organization promoting a fair and justice and just society for all. So they work to educate adults in communities across the country and to build their knowledge and engagement with financial justice issues. So this is done through workshops and public events, which includes book clubs, seminars and community workshops within the next year. But this cannot happen without visible interest and support. So you can sign up at financialjustice.ie, where you'll also be able to find events in your locality. And here you can further educate yourself, share your thoughts, support the organisation and their work. And why not bring a friend or send them the link to sign up to increase the awareness in your community?
Thanks for that, Caroline. And for those of you who are in UCC, University College Cork, why not consider studying a 12-week university-wide module in global citizenship and development education next year, where you will critically explore themes of wealth, poverty and human rights, social justice, sustainable development, local and global governance, financial justice, and much more. It is a course where you are given the creative freedom to take ownership of your education, share your thoughts in a supportive and honest environment, and collaborate with others in your local university community. For more information, can be found at parexucc.ie.
Or if you think you've had enough of assignments, which I can totally understand, and the college structure, or maybe you're a business and economic student looking to develop upon your knowledge on sustainability in your field, Financial Justice Ireland have a 6-week course beginning next week called Economy What, where you will study the impact of financialization, why debt crises keep happening around the globe, the role of corporations in paying tax, climate change, and the global financial system, the link between the economy, inequality, and well-being, and the role of citizens, communities, and governments in creating economic alternatives that put people and the planet before profit. This would also be an excellent course for members of the public who haven't studied business or development education and who are looking to become more informed local and global citizens of their communities. We must take responsibility for our individual actions first. And if you're looking to make your first move to a truly sustainable world, which includes positive social, economical, and or environmental progress, then head to financialjustice.re and sign up for an event. Donate and share the work of the organization within your community.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So there you heard, financialjustice.ie is the website you should check out. That's by Financial Justice Ireland, packed with information, video clips, and really, really helpful to explain the issue succinctly. If you're a teacher as well, there's loads of resources that you can use in primary and post-primary education. And if you really want to get stuck in, then check out that EconoWatt 6-week course. So that's all from us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to bring you this week podcast. I know it's a challenging topic, but hopefully we've planted some seeds in your mind to keep this conversation going and maybe even enough for you to take some action. So shout out again to our UW course, Global Citizenship Development Education. For information on the course, you can contact Dr. Gertrude Cotter in UCC. And I know I can speak for all of us today by saying it's a fabulous course. You'll learn a lot and you'll get to surround yourself with like-minded people as you explore what it means to become a truly global citizen. So I think we covered just about everything. Thanks again to Campus Radio and to you all for listening.